Hi, this is John Blanco, General Manager of Capella Bangkok, and this is my Smack episode.
Hi, friends, followers, and all you Smack nerds out there. My name is Philip Ibrahim, and I can welcome you to my newest Smack episode. Today, I had the immense pleasure to speak with John Blanco, the General Manager of the Capella Bangkok. I was honored to be called a brother in hospitality by him. He explained how his team inspires him every day and how it feels to win the World's 50 Best Hotel Award 2024. Enjoy the show. What an immense pleasure it is. Hey, John, it is so great to finally sit here and talk to you. I'm super, I don't want to say nervous, but I'm excited to finally meet the general manager of the 50 Best Hotel Awards winner of this year, which is probably, it's an amazing, outstanding achievement. So first and foremost, congratulations. There is no envy, well-deserved. And you have a big problem because this means that I'm going to visit you one day. You can already prepare yourself for that.
Looking forward to it. Thank you. Thank you very much. We're extremely humbled and honored by the recognition, and it's all about our people. I think it's a wonderful celebration of what they do every day.
Yeah, I agree. Let's take a little bit later on the award. I'm really curious to see if I have a chance to ever win that. I doubt it, but I just want to know, so I'm going to take notes.
Sure.
Hey, John, when we were chatting, we started by going a bit through your name and your heritage. And I don't know, I think within 4 seconds, I had to write down 7 different nations. So you're like the prototype of a hospitality guy because you have seen the world already. But can you tell me and especially the audience where you come from and how you ended up in one of the best cities in the world?
Sure, absolutely. I would say hospitality guy or international criminal, but I'll leave that up to you to decide.
You even said you were born in a hotel, so I don't want to jinx it.
No, yeah, in a nutshell, born in Venezuela to Bolivian parents. Grew up in Brazil, Australia, Abidjan, Ivory Coast, a little bit in the U.S. And thankfully, through this industry, have been able to work in 6 or 7 continents now. So I'm a gypsy at heart.
That's great. I always say my son, if I ask my son, where do you want to go next on holiday? He says Australia, because that's the continent still missing. All the others I have. My son is 10. So
nice.
I hope in something 20 plus years, my son will be in a podcast and be the one who says, no, I was traveling the world.
Hey, lucky boy.
But how did you end up in the hotel world? I mean,
yeah. So, I mean, it's, honestly, every time we moved with my father was a civil engineer. And so we would move every 2 to 3 years. And inevitably, in every country, we would have to live in a hotel for, I would say, between 1 and 3 months. So I grew up running around the hallways, bothering the housekeepers and running through the kitchens and being really raised by hospitality, you could say. And so I think that's how it got into my blood. And that followed by mom teaching me how to cook at a very young age. So I was in the kitchen as well and just gained a taste for making people smile, right? And giving pleasure to complete strangers. That sounds horrible, but it's in the hospitality sense of the word.
No, I 100% can relate. There is a thing. You have to like people in our business. It doesn't matter whatever life throws at you. At the end of the day, the person on the other counter or side does not all know all the stories. So I do relate 100%. And so your mother forced you to cook young at young age. By the way, that's what my mother said. She always said, I want you to be able to cook yourself. You don't need to have a woman that needs to cook for you. That was always her intention. So I see similarities there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think because of that, I my first dream was to be a chef. And so I, all through high school and university, I always worked in kitchens. And that's what I wanted to do. And first thing I did was I packed my bags and left to Europe and cooked for almost 6 years in Italy and in France. And this was before the EU, so I'm a bit older. But that was my first passion was the kitchen.
I have to say, but that helps in our industry to be connected to them, because this job is really the one handwork that we have in our industry. All the other things are service providing duties, but the chef is really somebody who is creative, who is able to, he has a product that he wants to care for. 6 years, that's a long, long time. So were you a head chef at the end?
No, man. You know what? This was, again, before the EU, and I carry, like it or not, I carry a U.S. passport. And back then, it was very, very different to get difficult to get a work permit. So I was always working sort of under the table. I had amazing experiences, absolutely have vivid memories of kitchens that I worked in. But I knew I had to get a little more serious. And so I went back to school and ended up attending hospitality school in Switzerland. And so I came to the other side of the fence, so to speak, and started working in management after I graduated.
Yeah, I think you said it. Kitchens are a fantastic place for very funny and dirty stories. So just a quick reminder, we have a format called Dirty Laundry. So John, feel free to send in your most favorite memories on your kitchen time. I'm happy to discuss this with Fritz on another format as well. But I think that being a chef really as well helps us providing a service in an environment that's not always that easy. So that's probably one of the things that really teaches us how to be humble in a situation where you have thrown a lot of things at you. So that's quite
absolutely
for me, quite
absolutely
impressive. Hey, you said you carry said you carry an American passport, so that's totally fine. But there's one thing though: which sports team do you support in the States?
Honestly, none in the States, but because I grew up in Brazil, I follow Flamengo, which is a football team in Brazil.
A soccer team, yes.
And what's that?
A soccer team for the Europeans.
A soccer team. And then I grew up playing rugby as well. And I'm a big All Blacks fan.
Oh, nice. That's
the
good
New Zealand team, yeah.
So that's a good one. It's the Haka team. So you're
That's right.
Yeah. Can you do the Haka as well?
I cannot. Right. Sadly,
so that's a life goal then. So you followed Brazilian soccer. So I cannot not say it, but there was a famous game between the German team and the Brazilian team that ended 7-1 for Germany, which is one of the best days in my life, I have to say.
That's right.
And, I know that in the Brazilian language, there is a fixed term. When things don't work out properly, they say it's 7-1, something like is after that game. A lot of Brazilian, when they want to express something's not good, they say it's 7-1.
I remember that game.
I love that. Hey, and then you said you moved to Switzerland. That has been quite a jump then, because from a kitchen into the Swiss environment of a hospitality school. Do you want to drop which one you have? I hope it's not Fritz's alma mater, EHL.
No, actually, we used to play rugby against EHL, but the school was called Glion, Centre International de Glion. And at the time, yes, near Montreux.
So for the other SMAC hosts that are all Lausanniers, there's one important thing. Who usually wins in rugby, Glion or Lausanne?
Well, in my day, back in the 80s, we would win, of course.
Ah, see? I told this. I'm going to discuss this in our next call. And then you studied how long in Glion? How long did you stay there?
I was there for 3.5 years.
Okay. And then afterwards, you started immediately going the management ladder up. What was the next station after that?
You typically do some sort of trainee thing. I did mine in San Francisco in California.
Nice.
And then it was a short one. And then I joined a hotel company called Ritz-Carlton and spent many years with them, almost 12 years with Ritz-Carlton hotels in Latin America and America, Europe. And
ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, that's right.
That's
exactly. Founded by a German chap, Horst Schulze, who's in those days before it was acquired by Marriott. He was really the visionary behind the brand. And my first job was in the mothership in a town called Buckhead, Georgia, which not many people have been to, but it's in Atlanta. And for whatever reason, the first or the main hotel was there, and that's where Horst was based. And he would always come through the hotel, and it was just incredibly inspiring working in that environment.
It's funny, before you said the word inspiring, I already wrote down the word inspiring, because for me, Horst Schulze is one of those few hospitality characters that really shaped our industry, probably for the outcome of I don't know how many years.
Absolutely.
There's even things I copied in my day to day. I can tell that there is the little card that all the employees get with the values, a value card where you have golden rules or whatever on it. That was always for me something, and I copied it for Berlin for my social hub, and I have a values card with our values. And on the other page, I wrote three simple questions that you can always fall back on when you're in conversation with a guest. And this is inspired by him doing this 10 golden rules cards. So do you still carry this 10 cards?
You know, it's funny because right now I work for a company called Capella, which he also founded. So You didn't know that? Oh,
no,
So when he sold Ritz-Carlton to Marriott, he said, okay, what am I going to do now? He couldn't sit still, right? He's full of energy. And he said, well, I want to create a luxury brand that's more boutique, that's even more personalized, that's even more, you know, fanatical about service. And he created Capella and used the same principles of Ritz-Carlton. And we have our own little card that we carry with our principles in it. And, but you know, it all boils down to, you know, when you look at it, it's not rocket science. It's really just very human principles, right? How you treat people and how you're empathetic and how you listen and how you really things that I talk to my people nowadays and say, listen, these are things that we should be doing with our own relationships, right? People that you love, you're thoughtful, you anticipate, you try to make them happy somehow. So same thing.
Hey, John, so many boxes are ticked at the moment with me, because there's so many things. I said the same in our last meeting yesterday to the team. I said, actually, is the basic principle of being a host, you want people to come in and to feel welcome. So whatever we boil it down to, it's common sense. It's yet a bit strange that we still have to emphasize on a lot of those things and keep on pushing. So it's as well a good reminder on what really cares of in our day-to-day operation. So I'm super happy.
What are the two questions that on your card for people to open conversation?
It's three. I'm going to share one. And the one is, what can I do to make your time outstanding? Or what can I do to make your day extraordinary, or your memorable, whatever you want to use? So it's more or less to really offer your side of the knowledge you have on the place you work. So it doesn't matter whether you're in the kitchen or wherever you are, there is a piece of knowledge that you have that the other person does not have. And to track this down, this truly connected relationship, that's one thing that I really want them to, I want to encourage. It will not always work, obviously. But if they, you know, have a moment and they have this card and they look at it and they remember this, that's always one thing that we practice.
Absolutely.
We try to repeat that on a weekly basis as well. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Hey, but that really is a perfect bridge to Capella Hotels, because I was not aware that Horst Schulze found that, and but this makes totally sense now as well, winning not only this award that we're going to speak in a couple of moments, but as well on the way you are and the principles you work with. But can you tell me a bit about Capella, because I did not know the company before we met, so probably there might be more people in Germany or in America who don't know it, so probably you can help them out.
Absolutely. It's a small brand. It was founded by Horst Schulze I think, gosh, maybe 15 years ago or so, and then a little over 7 years ago he sold it to a Singaporean family who is one of his main investors. So the Capella in Singapore was built by a family there called the Quees, and he was easing into retirement and entrusted them with the brand. And so now the brand is about 8 years old in its second life. We have 8 properties. And in terms of scale, it's always smaller properties. This is quite large, actually. Here in Bangkok, we have 101 suites and villas. But Ubud has 26 tents in the jungle, luxury tents, beautiful beautiful hotel there. Shanghai has, I think, 56 or so townhouses, old Shikumen townhouses in the French Concession. Hanoi, I think 90 rooms. So very small scale, generous luxury. And one word that we use a lot is craftsmanship and excellence in the craft of hospitality. And we always think of, you know, when a craftsman makes things with their hands, and every object, everything they do or make is different, right? And it's so we truly, everything we try to do is about, how do I make this tailor-made for you and for your experience and for what you're looking to do, for example, here in Bangkok. You know, you love food, you are looking to just recharge, or but even deeper than that. So being a smaller property, you can spend more time. You can really take a closer look at the individual, at the guest, and find ways to anticipate, to be thoughtful, to personalize, really at a higher level. I used to work for Ritz-Carlton, and these are 400, 500 room hotels, and work for Four Seasons, same thing. Wonderful companies, great brands, but you can only go so far when you have 500, 600 guests, and you know, have systems in place that work efficiently, but it's just a question of scale, right? So Capella is really about that tailoring, that taking the time to observe, to read the guests, to truly understand what it is that is going to surprise, delight, and create an extraordinary, using your word, moment for them. And ultimately to engage emotionally. So the value, I think, in hospitality or anything really of an experience, even, you know, shopping for clothes, it's emotional. If you have some sort of emotional trigger, then you're going to go back to that store, and you won't care how much you pay. You know, it's but if you have a crappy experience, then you're going to forget very quickly, and you're going to find, you know, look for reasons why, you know, why did I spend this money, and why did I choose this place?
And so it's well interesting to see the effect on people on brands, you know. So that means if you have a good product, but your experience with the people is not as great, you might not be likely to be willing to pull out that money for something.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, and your guests, are they coming? Is that, it sounds like they are not like one-offs. Cannot be, you know, if you have experienced that one, I'm pretty sure they're looking for this consumer handmade service attitude whenever they travel and away from the 300-400 bedroom hotels.
Yeah, I think, well, interesting, because we opened during the pandemic, right? And for the first year or so, we only had Thai customers. Wonderful. I mean, you've been to Thailand, Philip, and it's the people are just so lovely and very sophisticated. We always joke that Thai people never stay home. They love to be outside socializing and dining and meeting with family and friends. And so that benefited us during the pandemic, because they were in the hotel. They were staying. I think we had 50% occupancy through the pandemic because they were staycationing to death. They would come to the hotel and enjoy the open air and the restaurants and whatnot. But I think for us, the traveler after the pandemic was looking for something different, maybe less familiar in a way. I think people go to big brands because they are familiar. You know what to expect. But people, you know, they were locked in their homes, or there's this pent up desire to live life, right? And to take advantage of every single minute. And I think smaller properties, more boutique properties, properties that hotels that had have very distinct identities benefited from that and that shift, which is still today, I think, still it's changed. I think the way people travel is they really look for more than just a familiar, comfortable space. It's, you know, show me what you can do, stir emotions in me, give me something that I'm going to take away that isn't just a logo on a pair of slippers, but
and as well the will of investing the money in this memories. You know what I mean? So when they ask me what does it mean to be a father in my case, I always said I want to create memories now that can stay forever. And I think that's a bit the deal that I had. Even though I think the shift is difficult, as you just described, because the amount of people being willing to do so were less than before. But now those people are more conscious, I think that's the right word, in what they do. You know what I mean? So they're really... Greenwashing is way more difficult. Pinkwashing is way more difficult. Either you are or you are not, and people will call you out on this. And
absolutely.
I think for honest brands, that is a real chance, where for those who might search the dollar, sometimes it's a bit more difficult
to find that spot. I think you're absolutely right. That's right.
I feel like having this kind of customer, and I have to go back. You said that there is a house in Japan with townhouses. That's amazing. I don't want to Google now, but my fingers are already itching. I want to see how that looks like.
No, in Shanghai, yeah. If you haven't been to Shanghai, people think of it just as this huge metropolis, but there's a part of the city called the French Concession. And there are no skyscrapers. It's just old, beautiful streets with beautiful red brick houses. And it's super charming. And this hotel used to be an old, what was it? It was a French company, centuries old. And so there's these red brick townhouses. And so each of the villas of the hotel are one of these townhouses. And it's stunning, beautiful location.
You know what the downside on this podcast is? When I speak to people like you, I see my bank account shrinking because you create so much will to travel. I cannot travel all this, but I feel you, and I think this is a good one. But my question was: now you have a very identified customer base. I feel like these are people really, they know what they want. They request this as well, so you have not only to serve this to make them happy, but because it's your brand identity, let's put it that way. I feel like it's getting difficult finding those dimes in the market on the team side. How do you make sure that they read the golden rules, or that they really embrace what that means to be that kind of host in extent? Because everybody is a host. That's what I tell them. It's not only the people at reception. Everybody is a host.
That's absolutely right. That's just the... I have to say we're very, very fortunate in Thailand that there's a sort of foundational cultural base of a combination of Buddhism and I'm sure the climate has something to do with it, but there's just this beautiful natural ingrained hospitality in people that in the streets, no matter where you are, you will find. So that's a great starting point. And so I never minimize that, because it's not all destinations have that advantage, right? Mm-hmm. But then, so with that starting point and a very large labor force, so we don't have challenges with unions, we don't have challenges with manpower shortages, but we are quite lucky here. So, but then on top of that, we layer our culture, which again is very human. It's not something complicated. It's something that Thais do every day, in the sense of, there's a very strong belief of karma in Thailand. If you do something bad to someone or to something, or it's going to come back to you and maybe threefold. So there's a reason there's 500 temples in the city, and everyone is at a temple every day. And it's to, do good and good things will come. So our culture goes very much hand in hand with that, and even the Ritz-Carlton culture, but Capella culture, it's about as simple as it sounds. It's how do you treat people? How do you treat a complete stranger the same way you would treat a friend or a family member or a loved one, and give them an emotion and make them create a stickiness in the experience at the hotel?
Amazing. That's great. How big is your team in your hotel? How many people do you have?
We have 320.
And if you compare, how I mean, here in Berlin, my the in and out of staff members is huge, and I don't have 300. So I already have a very high turnover. Is that something you face as well, that you really see that they move on, develop to something bigger, or they really shape that they want to have a bigger hotel, less responsibility, or a smaller hotel, more responsibilities? That's something you could see there as well, or are they very loyal and they stay with you forever?
We have a large amount of loyal colleagues of staff members. I believe almost 60 of those 300 have been with us over 5 years, and then between 2 and 4 years is another, gosh, at least 150, 170 or so. And it's a combination of things. Of course, people might be tempted to move for a little more money. You know, the salary base in Asia, in Southeast Asia in general, but in Thailand is quite low compared to the rest of the world. And so there's always that temptation. And there are quite a few hotels opening in Bangkok.
I heard
Ritz-Carlton is opening, and Aman, and other hotels. So there's always that temptation to pull from the established hotels, you know, trained, highly trained staff. But I think thankfully we've been quite lucky. Typically in this market, turnover is about 30%. We are currently at about 15%. So not too bad. I think, again, I tell people that my number one job, and I take this incredibly seriously, is how do I create the best environment for people to come to work every day, loving to come to work, feeling seen, feeling heard, feeling I have everything I need, I have the best canteen food, I can be involved in decisions, and I'm empowered to make decisions. You know, if I can, and it's not easy, right? Because I can't do that alone. So it's not my job is to make customers happy. It's if I can make these 320 people overjoyed about coming to work every day, then they're going to do the right thing with the customer, right?
Yeah.
Consistently. So that's my why is, okay, how do I do that with these people? How do I make them like super, you know, ecstatic about coming to work and telling people to come to work here and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if you just cut it down to the numbers, if you have 60-80% of people staying for a long period, that means not only that they have embedded your vision and the culture of the company, but something in that keeps them coming. And it's, I think, this is exactly what the initial idea of giving or being in hospitality means. And this all led us, I would love to get some of this glory, led you into the award of right. No, I'm not sure, but this led you, but because now it's about you, into the 50 Best Hotel Awards. And this is it's an outstanding achievement. I'm pretty sure everybody has talked about that, tapped your shoulder wherever you come, they have a red carpet. But for me, for a hospitality nerd, this means something. You're the best of the best with what you do. And this is not John Blanco has reached that goal. It's you and the team reached that goal. So something in what you say and do resonated in the people to deliver this kind of service. So congratulations again. So how was this award not only received, but how is this conducted? How did you, were you chosen? Can you probably say a bit about that?
Sure. No, and thank you very much. It's the award is 2 years old now. So this is the second year of the 50 best list.
Okay.
It's an interesting one because it's, I believe there's a total of 600, if I'm not mistaken, voters. And you really can't, you know, it's not something necessarily we never in general as a company, but also in this hotel, we don't focus necessarily on prizes or on what that recognition is. We just, okay, let's focus on this place and the environment we're creating and the engagement we're creating with customers. And if recognition comes, and that's wonderful, right? And particularly for our teams, it's wonderful. But for this award, the 50 best hotels, we were completely surprised. We were in the list last year. I believe we were number 11. Already we were surprised to be included with the likes of you know, institutions, like incredible hotels in Europe and iconic hotels in Asia and in Africa. And so last year alone was a huge honor. Then this year, as it counted down, we were just completely floored and gobsmacked by getting to number one. And again, it's our people were so absolutely excited, and we partied with them, we celebrated, and they nice. They wear that badge proudly. And now it's we talk about it every day now. We say, guys, you know, we're on this pedestal in a way. You know, we people are going to look at us a little different, right? They're going to say, so you're the best one, right? And they're going to maybe take us apart and look a little closer at things. And so our game needs to remain high. We need to, of course, continue to do all the great things we do consistently. And unfortunately, you know, the good and the bad thing of these kind of awards is that, of course, it makes people a little more skeptical, perhaps.
I know what you mean.
A little more.
The best. Why is that not that spoon not correctly set up on this tray?
Exactly. But an incredible honor for us, and we're so happy for the teams.
Hey, and I don't know. Was there? Do you remember? Was there a particular colleague who was really disappointed? Was there one hotel that was really giving everything and they were sure to win? You know, like in the movies where you have this runner-up, never super surprised John Blanco, and then on the other hand, there was a table of those guys that invested everything.
No, I don't think so. I honestly, when I looked around the room and being the second year, there's many familiar faces, actually many ex-colleagues from Ritz-Carlton days that are now with different brands and working around the world. No, I think there's a great deal of humility. It's not, it's interesting. It's not an award that, sure, we all want recognition and we all want to get that sort of seal of approval from wherever it comes of validation, let's say, of what we're doing. But I have to say that there's really not that competition, let's say, of saying, I want to place higher than them. It's more what an incredible gathering of 50, you know, wonderful hospitality leaders. We can all learn from each other. And we get to spend a couple days together in London and to network and catch up and celebrate our properties and our people.
Mm. And do you feel an effect now already on the bookings? Is this something that drives new customers where you really say, hey, they came because they want to be with the best? I mean, I think that.
Yeah, you know what? It was a kind of a question mark saying, okay, well, it's a great marketing for our brand because, again, as a small brand, Capella, we with 8 hotels, we're building brand awareness in everything we do in every hotel and every customer experience. And so we saw, of course, the value, the marketing value of something like this. But we had an incredible uplift in bookings. In fact, you know, the month of October, we made our budget in the first week. It was crazy. And very last minute, people calling in, making bookings in the day for the day. Was it entirely the award? But no, maybe not, but definitely something there with related to that announcement and the recognition.
Crazy. That's 1 week for the budget. Congratulations.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
I hear my boss calling. How far are you? Hey, but looking into a bit the future, just take the next step now. We spoke about people and we know the importance of people, but I'm not sure whether you see the same. There is a bit of shift as well in the customer as well, what they expect from you. How do you embed new technologies in this very hand-picked service level? So I know a hard key, a wooden hard key to lock a door open, and it's nice, but it's very, you know, not in the time. I don't know. How do you embed the new technology for the next line in customers into your day-to-day operation? Is there something you discuss with the team already today?
Yeah, as a company, we have, and I say, I think in this sort of niche or space of hospitality, the human element, it will never go away. There is just no way that creating warmth and emotional engagement and I just don't see that as possible to be replaced by technology entirely. But what is wonderful about technology is leveraging it as a tool for efficiency, for analysis. We use more than a few tools to, for example, there's one tool we use to track defects. We call them glitches. Mm-hmm. So whenever anything happens, if it can be hardware, it can be equipment, it can be a guest experience, anything, we track it. And it's an app. And from that, we can pull data and we can measure and see, okay, where do we need to focus our attention? Where what's the 20 that's going to get us to 80? If we focus, you know, on these three things that are repeating as defects, then the delta to customer satisfaction is going to be greater. Mm-hmm. That's one example. And we use technology as just the basics, right? Communication, the little earbud and tracking of the guests, knowing where we track guest movements. It sounds creepy, but we don't do it in an intrusive way. But so we know that Kun Philip just had breakfast and is heading to the spa. And essentially, it gives our teams information that they can then act on. And if they bump into you on your way to the spa, they say, "Hey, Kun Philip, how was your breakfast? Or how was the omelet? Or how was?" I know later on you're heading to the temple to visit the Grand Palace, and make sure you take your raincoat because there's rain coming up in the forecast. Or so the technology allows us to arm our people with information that they can then act on and create thoughtful emotional engagement. That's another example of technology. But again, these are all tools that facilitate or make more efficient our engagement, but then also allows us to look from a quality perspective to say, okay, where can we improve and what should we be focusing on to get better and better every day?
I like that because as well, this helps the team members with more valuable information. They don't have to, you know, create a situation that can easily be created by having the back infos already. And in your company, that's what I asked earlier, you have a lot of repeating customers, obviously, I guess. Do you have in your back end already a big focus on the customer related data to really make sure that John today, who likes his omelet with, I don't know, only onions, will be offered the same when he goes to Shanghai in the townhouses? You know what I mean? Is that as a company?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. That's that recognition of the guest, particularly a guest that is staying in the system, so to speak, coming to another Capella. You know, in the old days, in my first internships in hotel school, it was the Hotel Excelsior in Crans-Montana. And this is all done with a little Rolodex, right? The little cards that you would write down, you know, Mr. Kun Philip Ibrahim, he comes every winter. He comes with his poodle named Shatsi, and he loves his Negroni. And you would write this stuff down, and then you kept that information. So now, of course, we use technology, and it pervades the company, so it's shared within the hotels, and we know that. Again, when you go to Capella Shanghai or Ubud, then that Negroni is there and Shatsi has some nice pet amenities and we can anticipate. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I have to say, you said it, technology just enables us to be better. But this is something, if you already have the guts to do so, it's just helping you and making your day easier. And I remember there's two things I always remember. One is from, it's a Ritz-Carlton thing that I saw when you I observed, I don't know which it's called, it was, I passed by and you see a cab pulling by, taxi pulling by, and bellboy opening the door, helping the person with the luggage. And I was a bit, you know, looking at that, and he read the name on the luggage tag, and he told the guest, just go ahead, I'm going to bring your luggage with the cart, and he put it on the cart. And while the guest was passing, he touched his earpiece and he said something. And later I realized he told the reception the name of the guest entering now. So by the moment this guest was at the reception, they said, "Hey, Mr. Blanco, good to have you. Nice that you're back." And this little moment of, you know, it's a zero invest. It's not even, you touch the suitcase anyway, you check that anyway, and this already creates so much loyalty that is so amazing that I never forget that. And the other one was in Bangkok, by the way. It's as well one of my highlights. I was traveling with my little son and his mother back then, and we arrived at the hotel, and when we were roomed, they asked us, can we take a picture? And I was like, okay, you know, from the mobile. So they took a picture. I said, yeah, of course. I sit down. We took a picture and we left. And in the evening when we came home, on our desk, there was the picture of us three in a frame on a night desk. And this is such this frame costs 5 cents, you know. The invest is nothing. That's what I mean. But the effect, it stayed for me for, you know, ever. And I think this is the good thing when you have people, and I like what you said about karma and as well the attitude. You have people who want to do good already as one of the basic tools, then giving them something in their hand helps them to grow. That's amazing. What inspires you today besides winning such an award? How do you inspire yourself and still shape this hospitality future every day?
Let's see. I think, you know, what really keeps me going and inspires me is when you take a very close look at the people, right, that I feel I'm responsible for, right? These 320 people, I have a huge responsibility to make sure they have, you know, food on their tables, that they can send their kid to school, that they can pay their car bill, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And when I see, you know, even at the very basic entry levels of, you know, people we have working here, what they go through just to get to work, right? Or just to support their own families, or Thailand is very, you know, you have these nuclear families, you have multiple generations living in a home, and you see that the dedication and the hard work and what they go through on a daily basis, that inspires me, because I feel very blessed and fortunate to have the life that I have, and to see people happy coming to work from something from their own hands, right? So they create this existence for their families, for their friends, whatever it is, through their own hard work, and they choose to do it with us, and so that's incredibly inspiring to me. It's it's kind of like I said, it's my why. And other than that, you know, my dad was a great inspiration. He still inspires me today. He's not with me us now, but his work ethic, I think, has always kept me going and inspired me to do what I do every day. And as you know, as a brother in hospitality, we don't look at the clock, right? We enjoy what we do. We love being with people. We love impacting lives in a way, hopefully in a good way. And that's what fuels us.
Wow, that's a strong ending. But I'll have one last question, John. Would you love to open a hotel? You're now in your 20s. Let's put it that way. But then you have there's one hotel left. What would you do an opening? The last opening or the next opening that you would do? Where would that be? If you could dream.
Well, as a matter of fact, quickly, I'm leaving Bangkok. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Philip.
No. But,
next week, very I'm leaving good. Bangkok.
At the end of the podcast, you mentioned it. That's nice.
I'm staying with this company. I'm being sent to Japan to open two hotels, one in Kyoto, Capella Kyoto, and Patina Osaka. And Japan has always fascinated me. I think it's an unbelievable country, and that's where I'm headed.
So you answered the question that was aiming for your dream with a real checkbox of your dream, because that means that you do something you really like. Then I have bad news for you, because I told you I'm visiting Bangkok first. I'm not gonna go to Japan. Wherever we're gonna meet, you have to come to Bangkok then. John, thank you very much. This was super inspiring, I have to say. You could see my notes. I took so many notes because this fuels me as well, because it gives me my why, that this is not we alone doing something. There is people everywhere in the world who have this intrinsic feeling of making other people happy in the best way possible. And I'm super, super thrilled to have had this podcast with you. Plus, to have learned so much from the approach that you take with you and your team and Capella. So thank you very much for that. And I hope to see you soon.
You will.
I bet in Bangkok. You bet in Japan. Let's see where. Thank you very
much. Asia awaits. Thanks, Philip. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.